This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
One, for 6 years as a nation, we have broken ourselves against Donald Trump. Now permanent Washington looks to break Donald Trump. We go through the Trump raid from the warrant and the law to probable cause and the timeline to the application of the law and credibility. Two, why does the IRS need more agents than the State Department, the Pentagon, the FBI, and Border Patrol combined? Three, if sports seems to zig to the zag of your expectations, I might be in for a good season of football. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to Monday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment, at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. If you think it's so worthy, give it a five-star review. Leave a comment. You can also watch this podcast at Rumble or on YouTube. I have set a new low watermark, a new bar, lower. I have just experienced the worst travel experience of my life. It might be worth a review. Up until this moment, the worst travel experience of my life was probably a good 6 to 8 months ago. I was flying in from Dallas to New York City to host Fox and Friends. The wake-up call, usually for Fox and Friends, is 4 a.m. I was flying into LaGuardia, and it was raining outside, but I had my headphones in, and I was watching a movie. I looked out the window at some point when I realized on my iPad that the clock read much later than our scheduled arrival time. And when I looked out the window, I realized that nighttime skyline was not New York City. I took out my headphones and looked at the lady next to me and said, "That's not New York." And she said, "You didn't hear the announcement?" "No. We're landing in Philadelphia." Apparently, there was enough rain and thunderstorms that the airline didn't feel confident landing in New York City. So we were to land in Philadelphia. Now, what am I supposed to do in Philadelphia? We were late. We were delayed. It was roughly 11 p.m. before we landed. The last train had left the station, literally, on the way from Philadelphia to New York. Now, one thing about the Northeast that you get your arms around once you live up here for a little while, or maybe simply when you live anywhere but Texas, things aren't that far apart. Philadelphia to New York City is like 2 hours, 2.5 hours. But that's too much for most Ubers. So I couldn't get an Uber. They kept canceling on me the minute they figured out my destination. And I couldn't get a car service because I was trying to get a hold of a producer at Fox and Friends, and most everybody was asleep. Eventually, they did track down a car in New York to drive to Philadelphia to pick me up and bring me back to New York. I was in my office on my couch at 2 a.m., and I grabbed roughly 2.5 hours of sleep. I pushed that call time to 4:30. That was my worst travel experience. It's now fallen to number two. Last Wednesday, when I was flying from Dallas to Iowa for the game between the Cubs and the Reds at the movie site of the Field of Dreams, my flight was delayed roughly 8 hours. Now, it was delayed and delayed and eventually canceled. But that's not really the problem. Here's what happened. We got on the plane, and you realize as you're walking down the jetway, this is going to be a small plane. And they grab one of those yellow valet bag tags and say, "You're not going to be able to put your bag in the overhead bin." Fine. Done it dozens of times. This will be just fine. Leave my bag at the end of the jetway and board the plane. We taxi out. We're prepared to take off. There's enough rain and thunderstorms in Dallas that we have to wait. We have to wait for the storm to pass. And then they decide, well, you can take off in the opposite direction and go around the storm. That requires us to fuel up and take on some more gas. So we go back to the gate and wait for the fuel truck. But every time there's a lightning strike, no one can move. Not the fuel trucks on the ground, not the baggage handlers. So they eventually ask us to step off the plane and stretch our legs. And as we are doing so, they say, you don't need to grab your bags, your valet bags. We're going to get back on the plane. I should have known better. We all should have known better. We sat around in the airport for 1, 2, then 3 hours. And then we get the notification on our phone that our plane has been canceled. My first step is to immediately find the next plane from Dallas to Cedar Rapids. And I successfully did so in order to get there that night to be on Fox and Friends early Thursday morning. But then I found myself in a crowd of people, angry people, trying to get their bag, not their checked bag, not their carry-on bag, but their valeted bag. And they were simply told, no. It felt like we'd been robbed. They said, no, don't worry. It's going to go on the next plane to Cedar Rapids. I said, but there's no information on that bag that says that it's mine nor its destination. They said, don't worry. I said, I am. But I had to get to Cedar Rapids. So I got on that next plane that did take off that night and landed me in Cedar Rapids at 1 a.m. 1 a.m. Central Time. I stood around for my bag, waited for it. It never came. So eventually at 2 a.m., I got a ride to my hotel. I was in my hotel and laid in my bed at 2:30. My call time was 3:30 Central Time. I grabbed 30 minutes of sleep. And that's not the worst of it. I began day two of 3 to 4 days of wearing the same underwear. Man, I'm covering Field of Dreams. I'm wearing the same clothes. I'm wearing the same socks. I'm picking up random, you know, hotel desk clerk toothbrushes. I am without my bag for a good 4 to 5 days. I travel to New York, where I have a stash of clean underwear, and I largely go about wearing suits. But I am confident they have lost my belongings. You can't get a human being on the phone. It's absolutely impossible. And I don't know if my bag's in Dallas or Cedar Rapids. All I know is it doesn't have a tag on it. It has my name, but that's about it. Eventually, days later, this past weekend, I get the call from a human being in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, who remembered it. That was key, the human being. Man, you cannot operate an automated phone tree system to find a lost bag buried in Cedar Rapids. I found a human being who remembered that I had filed, or the producer with whom I work had filed, a face-to-face complaint. And she remembered and called and delivered my bag to Dallas. I'm still wearing clothes that I've either bought in the last couple of days or have washed. But this is now number one on my list of worst travel experiences in my life. The producer I was working with on the Field of Dreams shoot had her own rough time. I think she hit a dead deer on the road. She got a speeding ticket. And I told her, like I'm some Zen Buddhist master, this too shall pass. I do believe that, and I did tell myself that. I did lay my head down for that 30 minutes that night and try to convince myself to be grateful. But I did know this too shall pass, no matter what it is, good or bad. And it's harder to remember that when it's good. But this too shall pass, even if you did just rack up number one on your worst experiences in travel. Story number one. I'll confess. I don't care if it's cheesy. I really liked Legends of the Fall. You remember the 1990s movie starring Brad Pitt and Anthony Hopkins? A Western where Brad Pitt plays a highly romantic character that every girl wants to sleep with and every guy wants to be. He is a wild and rough World War I fighter and cowboy. And at the end of the movie, there's a line. There's a line where his Native American friend says, I thought Tristan, the character played by Brad Pitt, I thought Tristan would never live to be an old man. I was wrong about that. I was wrong about many things. It was those who loved him the most who died young. He was the rock they broke themselves against. I think for much of the past 6 years, Americans have broken themselves against the rock of Donald Trump. Everything from COVID to Joe Biden has been a proxy about how you feel about Donald Trump. I don't know if you've ever played any strategy games, if you play chess, maybe even checkers. If you played any game that requires a little bit of subterfuge, a little bit of secrecy, there comes a point in the game where your opponent's strategy is revealed. A certain move is made. And you can see, I'm in trouble. I can now see the next five moves. I now see the way he's trying to guard me. I now realize why I'm losing. At that point in the game, you can delude yourself and keep playing with the same strategy that you started, or you can see the game for what it is. In the game of America, the move has been exposed. You should now be able to see the strategy of permanent Washington. Let's go through the Trump raid from the warrant to the application of the law. Let's start with the warrant to search Donald Trump's residence in Mar-a-Lago last Friday. The warrant granted the FBI the power to go through locked closets at Mar-a-Lago looking for classified material, materials marked top secret or TSCIF, top secret materials intended to be viewed exclusively in a secured facility. It's brought up a conversation about what is and is not a classified document. The Trump team has maintained that before leaving office, before leaving Washington, 4 hours before Joe Biden is inaugurated in as the president of the United States, boxes of materials were taken from the White House and effectively declassified by the then president of the United States, Donald Trump, meaning anything that is maintained at Mar-a-Lago is declassified. Is that true? On one hand, we have a mainstream media led by the likes and the voices, maybe best illustrated by Rachel Maddow, who believed that Donald Trump was selling state secrets and sharing the nuclear codes with our sworn enemies in exchange for quid pro quo payments. On the other hand, the documents were declassified. According to the New York Times, the president of the United States has broad authority and power to declassify, well, anything and everything at any time. I'm reading now from the New York Times. The legal basis for the classification system comes from the president's constitutional authority as commander-in-chief. Presidents have established and developed it through a series of executive orders dating back to the era encompassing World War II and the early Cold War. The classification system, for the most part, is about bureaucratic control. The main punishment for disobedience is administrative. Officials can be admonished and lose their security clearance or be fired. Now, the classification system is largely a system within the executive branch of the government that binds subordinates from sharing information that their superiors have deemed for only certain eyes. There is no superior to the president of the United States. I read now again from the New York Times. Can presidents declassify matters directly? Yes, because it is ultimately their constitutional authority. Again, quoting from the New York Times. Normally, presidents who want something declassified direct subordinates overseeing the department or agency with primary responsibility for the information to review the matter with an eye of making it more public. But on rare occasions, presidents can declassify something directly. For example, in 2004, President George W. Bush himself declassified a portion of his presidential daily intelligence briefing from August 2001, a month before the September 11th terrorist attacks, in which he had been warned Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S. The New York Times reporting and admitting, I'm sure to the chagrin of their followers, that it is in the power of the President of the United States to declassify. The classification system, again, is a binding administrative procedure on subordinates. The President of the United States has no superior. He can declassify at any time, anything, anywhere. I said this on Fox and Friends this weekend. It drew the attention of the usual slimy liars like those at Media Matters. But life is not driven by pop culture, and life is not driven by the reduction of Hollywood. There was a famous scene in the movie Frost Nixon, which was based upon the Broadway play Frost Nixon, which was based upon the real-life interview encounter between David Frost and Richard Nixon after he had already left office. And Richard Nixon issued a famous line in that movie, in that play, in real life. And he said, if the president does it, that means it's not illegal. Now, in the realm of pop culture, that is the aha, got you moment. Richard Nixon contends that he is above the law. It plays perfectly into the mantra that has been issued somewhere, I guess on high, for all media institutions to reiterate last week that no one is above the law. It is so odd how they develop these verbal tics in every channel from MSNBC to CNN to the New York Times to Washington Post. Glitch on to these religious mantras. I believe in science. No one is above the law. That's the current thing. And Richard Nixon's famous line, if the president does it, that means it's not illegal, works perfectly if your only real understanding of history, the Constitution, or the law is the reduction of Hollywood into the popular zeitgeist. Oh my God, screams Media Matters. Will Cain believes that Richard Nixon is the source of moral guidance. Richard Nixon, the president who had to be impeached, the president that resigned. As though it's all an indictment of anything ever uttered by Richard Nixon. But as is so easy to do, if you simply pay attention, we can again use their own words. This is PolitiFact in 2017. I'm quoting now. The national security experts at the blog Lawfare wrote, in the wake of the Post's revelation, talking about a Donald Trump utterance in 2017, that the infamous comment by President Richard Nixon that when the president does it, that means it's not illegal, is actually true about some things. Ooh, now that's interesting, coming from PolitiFact. But I'm not done. When the president does it, that means it's not illegal, is actually true about some things. Classified information is one of them. The nature of the system is that the president gets to disclose what he wants. PolitiFact, 2017. President Donald Trump has the power under the executive branch of the United States government, as granted to him in the Constitution, to control the classification administrative system of his government. If the documents that he held at Mar-a-Lago were deemed declassified, regardless of whatever procedure or forms we think must be followed, then those documents are declassified. Now, that brings us to the warrant. The warrant isn't as concerned about the classification of documents as is MSNBC. The warrant focuses in on the Espionage Act, a 1917 law that makes it illegal to maintain information, share that information that is top secret relative to America's national defense. It's an interesting law that will, if this case is pushed forward, be one that lands on the desks of the Supreme Court of the United States. Can the legislative branch bind the executive branch when it comes to information regarding the national defense? That will be a question for the Supreme Court. But the question for us is, just because the Espionage Act was invoked, does that mean Donald Trump was a top secret super spy selling nuclear codes to the Saudis? Let's look at the Espionage Act. Again, I believe I'm going to go ahead and quote, this time, from the New York Times. The Espionage Act, although it's called the Espionage Act, I'm quoting, it does not necessarily mean that Trump took the documents with the intention of passing them to a foreign power. The statute also covers more minor offenses. For example, someone who is lawfully in possession of documents, photos, and so on, and passes them to anyone not entitled to receive it. Interesting. So maybe not super spy, but maybe in possession of documents and shares it with someone who should not be in possession of documents. Oh, but wait, I'm not done. The Espionage Act also reads that it makes it a crime for someone to fail to hand over those documents to officials who ought to have it. So the Espionage Act can make it a crime for Donald Trump not to hand over declassified documents to the National Archives. We can run with the most salacious possible reading of the events of the past week. Espionage Act, Donald Trump, nuclear codes, super spy, tit for tat, quid pro quo, selling America for his own riches. Or we can read the law and realize that it also means, or could encompass, simply declining to return declassified records to the National Archives. It's interesting now. Let's move from the warrant and the law to probable cause and the timeline. The warrant actually doesn't tell us that much about what was in the interest of the FBI. In order for the FBI to secure that warrant from a federal magistrate, they had to file a probable cause affidavit. This is wherein they would have laid out their evidence and wherein they would have given us some insight into the allegations of a crime. Was it about not returning records to the National Archives? Was it about selling the nuclear codes? We'd know more if we saw that affidavit of probable cause. Now, this is where we get into the timeline. Something happened between June and August of this year. For roughly 18 months, the National Archives has been trying to retrieve certain documents from Donald Trump. They worked in coordination for quite some time. The National Archives got frustrated. We know that at some point, the National Archives calls upon the Department of Justice to get involved. The Department of Justice secures a subpoena to go into Mar-a-Lago and look through documents. And that's what they did in June of 2022, just 45 days ago. FBI agents, including those involved in counterintelligence, went into Mar-a-Lago and looked through documents, 15 boxes of documents held by Donald Trump. They took some away, and they then asked the Trump officials to secure that room with a padlock to keep it more secure and tight. There was even an interaction with Donald Trump and those agents of the FBI. It seemed at that point, it would seem, it's a reasonable assumption that the FBI had been satisfied, that they walked away from that encounter satisfied with what they found. Now, to be fair, it's possible that the FBI walked away from that encounter having witnessed something they think amounts to the potentiality of a crime. Perhaps they walked away satisfied. Perhaps they walked away with what they later used as a claim of probable cause in an affidavit to secure a search warrant. Something changed between June and August. And it's a curious change because to that point, the subpoena had allowed the FBI to go into Mar-a-Lago and peruse documents most probably at their convenience and freedom. But the second time around, there's an urgency, an exigency to go back in, not this time through a subpoena, but this time through a search warrant with 30 armed FBI agents. What changed? Now, we're told that urgency and exigency is back to the Espionage Act, that it could have been, according to the Washington Post, something to do if with not the nuclear codes, nuclear information of the United States of America. Let's dispatch with that absurdity with rapidity. There is simply no way that the FBI was certainly highly concerned about the nuclear codes. By the way, quite literally, we know it's not the nuclear codes. Those things change. You think that Donald Trump walked away with a few passcodes to the nukes and the FBI and the national security apparatus hadn't gotten around to changing it like an old house alarm or a padlock you just left on your house after you moved out? Whatever happens with the next guy. Those nuclear codes change on a daily basis. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's nuclear secrets. But are you telling me the FBI waited first 18 months from the initial negotiation with the National Archives? The National Archives wanted the return of nuclear secrets and waited through 18 months of negotiation and then contacted the DOJ, who only responded with a subpoena, and then finally decided to come in breaking down doors and safes to retrieve America's nuclear secrets. That is beyond belief. It's also beyond belief that that warrant was issued on a Friday and wasn't executed until a Monday, and it involved the retrieval of a nuclear secrets. You don't wait 3 days. Not if it's that serious. Not if it's that urgent. Not if it's about nuclear codes. So what happened between June and August that elevated this from a cooperative subpoena situation to breaking safes under a search warrant? Now let's turn to the application of the law. This past weekend, I was on Fox and Friends with the esteemed Bill Bennett, former Secretary of Education under Ronald Reagan, has been involved in numerous administrations and understands the workings of the United States of America. And Bill Bennett said something fascinating. He said, we have a legitimacy crisis in the United States. A good portion of this country just never accepted that Donald Trump is a legitimate president. They don't believe he's a legitimate person. They don't believe he's a legitimate businessman. They don't believe he legitimately won in 2016. He's not a legitimate president. There's another group of people in this country who are now in serious question of the legitimacy of America's institutions. And in no small part, that's because they've witnessed an inconsistent application of the law. We talked about it right here on the Will Cain podcast last week with Jonathan Turley. When it comes to classified documents, in the past, there has been no invocation of the Espionage Act. There has been no search warrant execution. And to a large extent, there has been no criminal prosecution. We can look at the examples. Hillary Clinton. And everyone on the left thinks the right just yells, but her emails, and invokes Hillary Clinton. It's fairly on the nose. And by the way, when it comes to classified documents, Hillary Clinton had superiors. She was not the president of the United States. So classifications mattered to the Secretary of State. She had classified documents, emails on her server. We know this to be true. Did the FBI execute a search warrant? Did they bust down doors? Did they prosecute? No. Sandy Berger, as told to us by Jonathan Turley, absconded with classified materials in his sock stuffed down his pants. Was he the subject of a search warrant or raid? No. General David Petraeus shared American military secrets with his lover, his extramarital affair. Was he met with a raid and the weight of the United States DOJ in prosecution? No. And it is not off base to bring up Hunter Biden, whose laptop is the subject of potential corruption at the highest levels of the American government, and ask not only why has Hunter not been the subject of a raid or a search warrant, but not much at all of an investigation, and in fact, the spin that any questions about the Bidens is disinformation. It is an unequal, inconsistent application of the law. But there is consistency. And the consistency is that for 6 years, Donald Trump has been the subject of an attack by many American people and many institutions, from the media to the national security state apparatus, who believe that he is illegitimate. That has been consistent. And that brings us to our final category: the credibility of these institutions. We've talked about this in the past. If there are many people that believe that Donald Trump is illegitimate, there are perhaps more, who believe that the institutions of the United States are now illegitimate. And why would they believe that? Why would they have such little faith? Why would they believe the FBI, the DOJ, the media have no credibility? It might be because of this over the past 6 years. One, the Russia collusion hoax. Two, the Steele dossier hooker story. Three, Russia paying bounties on U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. Four, Trump calling neo-Nazis, supposedly, very fine people. Five, Trump suggesting drinking, injecting bleach to fight COVID. Six, Trump overfed koi fish in Japan. Seven, Trump cleared protesters with tear gas for a Bible photo op. Eight, Hunter's laptop was Russian disinformation. Nine, elections were fair because no court found major fraud. 10, January 6th was an insurrection to overthrow the government. 11, Trump tried to grab the steering wheel of the beast. He leaned over the Secret Service and grabbed the steering wheel of the beast. If you believe that, you will believe in Peter Pan. All of these stories are false. Now listen. There's a great many people who don't know that and won't believe that when I say that. And they'll say they even have visual evidence and they've seen it with their own eyes. I've seen the smoke grenades going off and Donald Trump holding up a Bible. What they don't know is those stories have been debunked. That was down the street. It wasn't where he crossed the street. They don't know that it's been totally debunked that he neglected to care about Russian bounties on U.S. soldiers. They don't know that the Steele dossier was complete and utter fabrication. They don't know that the Clinton campaign seeded the entire predicate for the Russia collusion hoax. They don't know any of these details. They don't know the truth. But for those that do, we're just going to jump on the bandwagon of believing that Donald Trump stole the nuclear codes. There's a loss of credibility in Americans' institution, and that leads me to what I believe. I believe the following. I believe Donald Trump represented a threat to what I have begun to call the uniparty and permanent Washington. I don't think it is expansive enough to just indict the Democratic Party. Oh, yes, it is to the benefit most often of the Democratic Party, but it is not exclusively the Democratic Party. It also includes Republicans. It includes career bureaucrats. It includes the apparatus that remains when political parties come and go, when elections are won and lost. It is permanent Washington. Call it what you want. The administrative state, the deep state, whatever. Donald Trump represented a threat. If a good percentage of Americans broke themselves against the rock of Donald Trump, permanent Washington was intent on breaking Donald Trump. Just about 2 weeks ago, Axios reported that if Donald Trump wins a second administration, one of his primary objectives would be to cut 50,000, just 50,000, but 50,000 of the 2 million jobs within the federal government. That he wanted to take a butcher knife to the administrative state. Say what you will about Donald Trump, but you and I both know one adjective that absolutely applies is outsider. Oh, you want to argue about competency? You want to argue about moral clarity? You want to argue about character? Fine. But you can't argue. He was an outsider. And for that, he would never be forgiven, especially when he acted like an outsider who would destroy some of the inside. Chuck Schumer, Democratic senator from New York, knew exactly the tightrope that Donald Trump was walking, and he warned Donald Trump. Listen.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
What do you think the intelligence community would do if they were motivated?
I don't know, but from what I am told, they are very upset with how he has treated them and talked about them. And we need the intelligence community. We don't know what's going on. Look at the Russian hacking. Without the intelligence community, we wouldn't have discovered it.
Do you think he has an agenda to try to dismantle parts of the intelligence community? I mean, this form of taunting hostility.
Whether you're a super liberal Democrat or a very conservative Republican, you should be against dismantling the intelligence community.
That is Chuck Schumer telling Donald Trump, if you mess with the national security apparatus, they have six ways of Sunday of getting back at you. Don't listen to me. Listen to Chuck Schumer. I don't believe this was ever about classified documents. I don't believe this is about the retention of any documents. I believe this was a fishing expedition in large part with two potential goals. One, to find something, anything, to disqualify Donald Trump, either through the legal process or in the mind of the American public, most likely tied to January 6th. That's why the presence of counterintelligence FBI agents during the raid. Find something. Find anything. No one is really concerned about the Espionage Act. Nobody is concerned about classifications. Nobody is concerned about top secret. Find something. Find anything incriminating about Donald Trump. Or in the alternative, tie him up in a legal battle about classifications that goes all the way to the Supreme Court. Something that bogs him down, mires him in the mud, distracts him from a campaign for presidency. By the way, the warrant, with both of those goals in mind, is so broad. Warrants are largely supposed to be narrowly tailored both in scope, target, and even geography. The warrant here is so broad that Donald Trump doesn't just have to play defense. He can possibly play offense. He can challenge this as a violation of a Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution. But at this point, I want to ask you what you think. I've told you what I think. I believe Donald Trump represented a threat to permanent Washington. And this is permanent Washington looking to break Trump. So I ask you this. How many of us have been broken against the rock of Trump? It always boils down to it, doesn't it? COVID, Joe Biden, science, really just proxy fights, all about how you feel about Trump. And there are people that hate Trump and always will. They were broken against the rock. There are others, by the way, who love Trump and always will, regardless of what he does. But what I'm curious about is those souls, those people who either have floated down the stream and not yet met the rock or managed to float around the rock. I'm curious about those people. Will they see this raid? Will they see this moment in time as an opportunity to break themselves against the rock? Will they turn against Trump? Or will they see this opportunity as the strategy move that has all of a sudden opened your eyes and you can see the game of permanent Washington? I sincerely do not know the answer. What will happen to the average American? What do they think? How will they vote? How will they believe or establish credibility or live in a unified United States of America? And I'll leave that to you, because I ask that question in all earnestness. You can leave a comment on YouTube. You can go to my social media, Will Cain on Twitter, see Will Cain on Instagram, Will Cain on Facebook. What do you think will happen? Will America break themselves against the rock of Donald Trump, or will they see that final strategy move? Will they see permanent Washington?
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Story number two. Why does the IRS need more employees than the State Department, the Pentagon, Border Patrol, and the FBI combined? Earlier this week, Congress passed the Inflation Reduction Act. It's pretty fascinating. Almost immediately after being passed, the Inflation Reduction Act all of a sudden stopped being referred to as the Inflation Reduction Act. This was pointed out by Stephen Miller on Twitter. Goes by the handle Red Steez. He pointed out that the New York Times immediately last Sunday and Monday read as follows from the headlines: Senate vote puts climate action in reach. All caps. I thought we were reducing inflation. Climate action? The New York Times wasn't alone. CBS reported, Senate passes Democrats sweeping climate, health, and tax bill. Yesterday, it was the Inflation Reduction Act. CNN and The Guardian used the same language, trotting into town like a snake oil salesman who told you that the magic elixir would solve every manner of ills, from bad complexion to cancer. And now he tells you, hey, man, you already bought it. It's snake oil.
largely lard melted down, a few spices mixed in. Welcome to our new thermostat, the Climate Reduction Bill. Nancy Pelosi laid it out this week in sincerely comedic terms. Listen to this.
How can they vote against the planet? Mother Earth. Mother Earth gets angry from time to time, and this legislation will help us address all of that.
How can they vote against the planet? Mother Earth doesn't like it when you don't make sacrificial offerings. Mother Earth can get very angry. It's literally deifying nature, the planet, Mother Earth. It literally sounds like a 13th century priest asking for offering. How can they vote against the planet? Make your sacrifices. It is elevating climate change, of course, not to the mantle of science, but to the mantle of faith. Don't make angry Mother Earth. For what it's worth, the Inflation Reduction Act also empowers the IRS to hire 87,000 new agents. 87,000. I think some context is in order. As we stand today, the IRS employs 93,000 agents. So in essence, just shy of doubling the IRS does the Inflation Reduction Act. It gives the IRS 170,000 employees. Now, I mentioned it. If you combine Border Patrol, who maintains about 19,000 officers employed, the FBI, roughly 35,000, the State Department, and the Pentagon, you get 159,000 employees. The IRS with more employees, again, than the State, Pentagon, FBI, and Border Patrol combined. Why? Well, of course, for audits. Almost everyone has recognized at this point that the Inflation Reduction Act is going to amount to more audits. And we can sell ourselves little lullabies at night that those audits will almost exclusively be focused on the rich people, but there are simply not enough rich people in America to pay for the spending plans of the Democrats. You could tax every millionaire in the country, as quoted by my co-host and friend Pete Hegseth this weekend, at 100% taxation rate, and you will fund the United States government for 6 months. No. They're coming after the middle class. Why? Because that's where the money is, in the middle class. According to Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, 90% of people making between $75,000 and $100,000 can expect a tax increase. 97% of people between $100,000 and $200,000 a year in annual earnings can expect a tax increase. Americans for Tax Reform says this will also include taxes on crude oil. Oh, more inflation. So like the opposite of the Inflation Reduction Act. And of course, more audits. What do you think all those 170,000 IRS agents are going to do? We have to understand that story one on this podcast and story two on this podcast are connected. I think one of the truest things that Donald Trump ever said is they're not after me, they're after you. I'm just in the way. Permanent Washington will look and find and implement a way to remain permanent. By the way, the Inflation Reduction Act and the IRS's increase in employment serves as a backdoor fundraiser. Fascinating little ploy for the Democratic Party. Here's why. The National Treasury Employees Union, public sector employees union, represents 70,000 of the currently 87,000 employed IRS agents. 70,000 IRS employees represented by the National Treasury Employees Union. The Americans for Tax Reform found that the union's political action committee donated roughly $600,000 in the most recent campaign cycle. Any guess where that money went? 97% of it went to Democrats. So let me get this straight. A public sector union that represents the employees of the IRS contributed funds to Democratic politicians, and 97% of those funds went to Democrats. Democrats, in turn, fund the expansion of the IRS and, by extension, the National Treasury Employees Union, thus in turn funding more salaries, more union confiscations, more political contributions back to Democrats. What a convenient and vicious cycle. There's always a ploy for permanent Washington to remain permanent.
All right, we're going to step aside here for just a moment. Stay tuned.
Story number three. Sports has a way of zigging to the zag of your expectations. And let me tell you something. If that's the case, I might be in for a good season of football. Or did I just jinx that, and now my expectations are too high, and I'll be met with lower expectations? I don't know. I'm confused. Help me sound this out. I'm not optimistic at all. Boy, early preseason for the Dallas Cowboys and the Texas Longhorns has been ugly. Texas Longhorns had their first scrimmage this past Saturday, and it was ugly. They lost several important players, including Isaiah Neyor, a new wide receiver, perhaps for the season. On top of that, the players that did play, like the offensive line, looked awful, awful. Dominoes fall. The quarterbacks, in whom we have so much hope, like superstar recruit Quinn Ewers, no bueno. Didn't look so good. All of a sudden, my expectations and my hope for the Texas Longhorns are low. Also this weekend, the first preseason of the game for the Dallas Cowboys in the National Football League. My expectations, low. Now look, 17 of 22 starters didn't play, but those that did, specifically again, the offensive line, ugly. Same thing that always happens with the Cowboys, penalties. I'm not excited. I have a sinking feeling. This football season could be really ugly and ugly soon for both my Texas Longhorns and my Dallas Cowboys. But my only consolation is that I tell myself how often when I've gone into a season with low expectations, it has gone well. And how often when I go into seasons with high expectations, it ends poorly. Tony Romo gets hurt, season over. Not so fast. Let me introduce you to Dak Prescott. Maybe that's my only hope. Since my expectations have fallen and I'm feeling so low, maybe it'll exceed expectations. Except, am I outsmarting myself by overthinking this? And now my expectations are rising because I think that means low expectations lead to good seasons. And now I'm going to be met with a bad season. I don't know. I'm confused. I need your help. All I know is in the next couple of weeks, we're about to dive in. We're going to talk about fantasy football. I'll guide you through what I think are some of the best picks in fantasy football. We'll talk about the NFL. We'll go through a preseason list of what we think will happen in each division and who, I'll make my prediction, makes their way to the Super Bowl. And we will talk about college football, the future with super conferences, but also this season and who will make the college football playoff. That's all coming up in the coming weeks here on the Will Kane podcast. Even if I'm not all that excited, even if I don't have high expectations. That's going to do it for me today. Hey, share this podcast with your friends. Again, leave a comment on YouTube. Leave it a 5-star review if you think it's so worthy on Apple or Spotify. And I'll see you again on Wednesday.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.